Hello, welcome to the Pluralcast. My name is David Starr, and today's episode is a real good one. Today we speak with Ken Schwaber, one of the originators of Scrum, and we talk with him about his recent activities in Scrum.org and his efforts to bring about a new program for certified Scrum developers. In addition to a great discussion with Ken about the program, Scrum.org, and just Scrum in general, we also talked with a graduating class coming out of the Certified Scrum Developer Trainer Program. These are the folks who are going to be teaching this course around the world. And I happen to be one of them, full disclosure here. We'll talk a little bit more throughout the show about why I and Pluralsight have decided to become a part of this program being sponsored by Scrum.org and Microsoft. At the Professional Developer Conference in November of 2009 in Los Angeles, I was fortunate enough to be able to facilitate a Birds of Feather session wherein a lot of people came together who wanted to share their experiences around agile software development. Around 30 minutes into this discussion, it occurred to me that no one in the room had mentioned anything about agile software development that didn't involve Scrum. I asked the room that held about 180 people, who in this room considers themselves to be working on an agile software development team and yet does not use Scrum as their primary way of managing work? Out of the 180 people in the room, approximately 5 people raised their hand. That was striking to me and prompted me to post a series of articles on the fact that Scrum does not equal agile software development and there are other alternatives. It was interesting to get Ken's take on this story.
Now that XP has unfortunately disappeared largely from view, except as an idea, Scrum is the only well-stated, clearly defined process that is agile. There are a lot of other build-your-own kits, so Crystal, FDD, things like that. Even the introduction of other ideas from other industries, such as Kanban and Lean. But Scrum is a well-described, small, very small set of rules, artifacts, roles, time boxes that allow someone to, right out of the box, start doing things in an agile way or find out why they're not doing it in an agile way. So if you wanted to play, let's say, the game of chess, great game, easy game to get into because you can just go buy one, read the rules in about 10 minutes, and then start playing. And Scrum is exactly the same.
So there's a basic framework to follow. If we get that basic framework, we can do it.
Exactly. You can, and let's work on the word it. If you use the basic framework, you will be doing Scrum and you will discover, and this is the intention of Scrum, it's not a methodology that will solve your problems. Instead, it creates transparency, so it will expose every possible reason why you're having trouble building high-quality, industry-shaking type software. And then you can start working on improving it.
So within that room, my guess was that of the 175 people who effectively claimed to be using Scrum, that some fraction of that number, some percentage of that number, really are doing Scrum. And that gets to the whole Scrumbud discussion that's been going on lately. Why do you think Scrumbud or Flaccid Scrum is such a prevalent phenomenon?
Because change is extraordinarily hard. When I introduced Scrum, I kept it very simple and free on purpose because I didn't want people to see it as the answer to their problems. I wanted them to see it as a tool that they could use to expose, make transparent the issues they had, and then work on them piece by piece by piece until they became the best software development organization in the world. The things you uncover are astonishing. You know, like people don't want to work together. Like quality assurance, those people really just test and see if we engineers build something that works. I mean, the number of misapprehensions are incredible. Someone once pointed out to me that if you consider the average organization now, which has problems of releasing software on time, schedule slipping, stabilization taking too long, changes being hard to introduce midstream, and you consider all those problems, those are not aberrations in a perfectly running software development organization. Instead, those are manifestations of an organization that is set up to produce those problems year in and year out. Now, you bring in Scrum, and it is going to show every reason that organization why those problems occur. And changing those problems, change the organization so those problems disappear, is very, very hard. I suspect of all the organizations that attempt Scrum, perhaps 20% of them will really, really follow and change and do well. And those companies are the ones that I personally work mostly with. And my intention is that they will outcompete, outperform, and be a far better place to work than the others. So think a little of comparing this to Toyota before its accelerator problem and GM, Chrysler, Ford.
You've just described an environment, though, that sounds like a very high-touch need from Ken Schwaber to make Scrum work.
If I were smarter, that would probably be true. What it actually requires is are people being willing or able to look at the reasons that Scrum exposes and to, rather than saying, oh, darn, those are bad problems, we better change Scrum so they don't show up anymore, to people who say, wow, those are really significant problems. I wonder how much money we're losing by doing that. We better change that. So one of the exercises in a course I give is, you are on a Scrum team and two of your people are in Boston, some are in China, some are in St. Petersburg, Russia, a couple in San Jose. How do you hold your 15-minute daily Scrum? And the answer, of course, is it's very difficult to do so. Matter of fact, you're probably going to have a lot of miscommunication. Now, all that points out is that you've set up things so that you are pretty ineffective. Now, are you going to straighten that out so you are more effective, or are you going to continue doing that, or maybe even change Scrum so you only have that daily Scrum once a week because having a daily Scrum is so hard to do? So I think it requires clear vision, desire, and willingness for hard work for people to take the information that they can get from Scrum and do something with it. And that doesn't require Ken Schwaber. That requires probably good to have a coach who's been through it before, not necessarily me at all. But that requires mostly a determination.
You know, one of the things, Ken, that's been going on this last week, it just so happens, this last week down in Florida, I believe was the annual conference of the Scrum Alliance, the Scrum Gathering.
Yes.
I'll tell you, one of the things I did this week is I set up a little Twitter search that just would show me every time somebody mentioned the word Scrum. So I've been watching that this week and watching the news coming out of Florida from the Scrum Gathering. And I can tell you, Ken, that Scrum is receiving a lot of criticism right now.
Scrum or Scrum Alliance or...
Well, people are directing their comments towards Scrum as a process.
Ah, okay.
Another thing that I did is right before our show here, now I asked people to send in some questions. You know, those folks that have been complaining all week, it's time to let's hear what you really have to say. And so I have a couple of questions from you from Twitter, and I'd like to just read them to you. Steve Bolin asks, has the ship sailed and the cows left the barn on Scrum? Can it recover its respect after the dilution of the CS star, meaning the CSM, Certified Scrum Master, Certified Product Owner, debacle? And if Scrum can be helped and its respect can be recovered, how can this happen? How can this be achieved?
So that's like seven questions in one, isn't it?
The way I read that is Scrum done for?
Wow.
And if it's not done for, how can it recover its respect within the community?
Okay, one thought first. We talked earlier about the game of chess.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you and I are open up the chessboard and take out the rules and we look at it and we start playing for, you know, a couple of days of chess. And it is so frustrating because we're not really skilled at it. The moves aren't really straight. Matter of fact, it hurts our heads because we have to think very hard. For us then to quit playing chess and say it's a bad game is kind of missing the point.
Or maybe to change the rules so that knights don't move in such a complicated manner.
I'll say that's a really a nasty rule. Whoever thought of that one? So I think to blame or to say Scrum has failed when people have not necessarily used the information from it in a way that's can improve their organization misses the point. The Scrum gathering, I did not attend it. Probably a little ruefully.
That was fairly notable, the fact that you were not at the Scrum Alliance discussions this week, and it was also discussed online. I saw some discussions about that.
Well, it's a little like having a child. You know, you know how you love your children, and yet one of them goes wrong and winds up in jail for some heinous crime, and you really want to visit them frequently, but it's very, very hard to do because it's really gut-wrenching.
Oh, good Lord. That sounds horrible.
It's just a horrible event.
And as a father, you just scared me.
Oh, no. Well, I'm sure you will succeed, and this will never happen to you. I love the people in the Scrum Alliance. I love the work that they've done. You know, they help spread Scrum in a large, large way across the world. And so not to visit them, not to talk with them is wrenching. But they have gone astray. When we started Scrum Alliance as a way of having a community for Scrum, it was a way for people to connect, for people to organize, for people to talk, for people to share. And unfortunately, as Scrum grew in popularity, what the Scrum Alliance became instead was a money-making enterprise, even though it's nonprofit. And its primary purpose was to secure and enhance the revenues for the Scrum Alliance and for its trainers. This ran very contrary to my intentions. And when I had started advancing things that I thought would remedy this, I was requested to leave the Scrum Alliance and did in the fall of last year. Two of the initiatives that I thought were really, really important to help the Scrum Alliance regain its integrity were to make the assessment, the certification, a real one. So if you look at scrum.org now, anyone can take the assessments on knowledge of Scrum, and they will be certified if they achieve or indicate an adequate degree of knowledge. And this is both at the what is Scrum at a very detailed level, and this is also how do you use Scrum at an intermediate level.
I hear what you're addressing being the fact that there's almost a running joke around the Certified Scrum Master, quote, certification out of the Scrum Alliance over the years, right? That it was really proof that, or I used to think it was proof that you didn't fall asleep for 2 days, but it turns out that you could nod off.
You could nod off for all 2 days.
So
it could be a relaxing endeavor.
So it sounds like your initiatives with Scrum.org are trying to turn that word certification into something that has a little meat.
Meat, and as well as to improve the integrity of the process of delivering it. So, for instance, every certification is supposed to be based on a body of knowledge. Many, many attempts to advance consulting careers to change Scrum so it included Kanban, Lean. So Jeff Sutherland and I formalized the body of knowledge into something that's now on Scrum.org, and that's it. We also put in place things where if you are training on our courses, there are standard courses that are being used. So we know that a certain message is being delivered. We monitor the trainers through evaluations and the scores their people get. And we also work with them twice a year to upgrade the materials. So all the things which would make and potentially risk someone's income if you were your sole goal was to make more money are now embedded into scrum.org as an attempt to enhance, to make it right.
So I hear you describing scrum.org as a way forward in answer to Stephen's question about Scrum recovering its legs.
Yes, and probably to Stephen, I would tell him that Scrum's survival is not really important. Scrum is just a real teeny tool that we're using to improve our profession. So it's pointing out things that have plagued all of us, like retaining the quality of our software, not going on death marches, actually refactoring stuff when it needs it. So it attempts to get at all of those things. Now, Scrum is just a vehicle for doing that. If Scrum disappeared and deep in our hearts, all of those things were built in, so you know that became all of our goals, it wouldn't matter to me if Scrum became something that was in limbo or gone. To me, it's just a vehicle for making that happen. This afternoon, I'm going to go out to my company, Parametric Technology, and talk with them about their product management people about why Scrum is useful. And in that, I'm going to be discussing how, if they use iterative incremental, they can optimize to maximize value by only delivering what's needed and not delivering what's not needed, and basically taking in changes on the fly. Now, that is really important for businesses, but we can only do it if we're good engineers and build done software every iteration. So Scrum's my vehicle for talking. It's a common set of words, but the intention is not Scrum itself. It's what it can accomplish.
One of the things that you mentioned there in your answer, although lightly, was the idea of or technique of Kanban.
Yes.
So is Kanban or Scrumban, as I know, as a process that's been discussed, are those a part of the Scrum body of knowledge?
No. It's a way of using Scrum for fast cycle, continuous feed work. And I think Jeff Sutherland first came up with it at PatientKeeper. And it's a really clever use of Scrum. However, it's not Scrum. But I think there's value in it being explicitly stated for people who have that type of work.
So there's a recognition here that Scrum isn't, as you've said for so many years, that silver bullet for all situations, right? Sometimes we need to do things a bit differently.
Scrum is less a silver bullet and more an enema. not something you use to solve a problem with that isn't really serious.
One thing that I experienced early on in my career when I began adopting Scrum in the wild, if you will, is a complete inversion of the servant leader kind of mentality within an organization. And here's what I mean by that. Scrum and then scaling it up, you know, starting with a Scrum team in IT and then scaling that up and out into other departments, and then ending up with a Scrum of Scrum fund, and finally a Master Scrum, really turned the service model of the organization on its head, such that rather than a manager being served by the workers underneath him, his job very clearly became to serve the workers in order to help them get done with the work that we were all doing. Was that an intent of Scrum, or is that a side effect?
It wasn't part of the thinking when Scrum was developed. It was inherent in Scrum from the initial articles that Jeff read by Nanaka and Takeuchi, where management puts the team out and says, do the best you can, and if there's anything you need from us, we'll help you, but we're not going to interrupt you because you're our best people. So it's inherent in it. But it goes a little further because when you strive to use this organizationally, it requires changes in the entire organization.
So that's interesting because I've heard several folks assert that Scrum is actually a sub-optimization of teams, right? That Scrum does a great job of building really, really strong teams, but does so at the expense of the larger organization. What are your thoughts on that?
Wow. So I would say that it presents an opportunity for the larger organization to learn how to be agile and how to address complex work as a whole. A tenet in Scrum that's been becoming more obvious to me is that Scrum is absolutely perfect for complex work and that there is very little work that is not complex anymore. And this then drives it throughout the entire organization, for the organization is a way of taking advantage of being agile. I am starting to view this as not just a development approach or a new technique for getting better, but given the rising complexity and criticality of the products that we're building and their overall complexity, I think that this approach is absolutely mandatory for any organization that's going to be successful in developing and supporting the products we need in the future. And I think so this will be the equivalent of the shuttering that happened when all the lean principles started being adopted by world-class organizations.
Now, back to scrum.org just for a moment. One of the things, one of the new initiatives there is the professional scrum developer program. And full disclosure here, I'm deeply involved in that program, but I wonder if you could explain to us what that is and what the intent behind it is.
Well, it ties back to Martin Fowler's description and even Steve Bullen alluded to it, a flaccid scrum, where people would come into an organization and they'd see iterative incremental development, but the teams weren't performing. The teams would kind of flounder during the sprint, during the iteration, of how to do things, how to work together. And much to my surprise, most of them were not well-tooled. They didn't have automated test harnesses, for instance, refactoring tools, code coverage tools. And even worse, most of them were not aware of or had forgotten modern engineering principles such as test-driven development, such as refactoring, you know, all the things which which make our profession great and which make the software really good. So the Scrum Developer Program, I started working on that last March, and that was in conjunction with, I think, Richard Hundhausen, some people from the ex-Conchango and Microsoft, mm-hmm. on how to teach people to do the same thing they do in a Scrum Sprint. That is, how to select a product backlog item, some work, and turn it into something that's potentially shippable within an increment, using as a team that is working together, that is self-organizing and cross-functional, using modern engineering practices and working on a particular technology stack. So for my example, Microsoft, that's .NET. And this is set up, this program is set up so that people get many tries at this, so 5-6 tries to do this. And each time they find what they're struggling with in trying to do it, and they get to correct it in the next one, until when they come out, they know good engineering practices, the technology stack, and how to work together and what it actually means to have something that's done. So this is a lot of stuff to be taught in a week, but it drives exactly what we're really trying to do.
One of the things that is more true than not when people ask me questions about Scrum, they don't ask questions about the overall framework of Scrum. That's fairly well known, and it's a fairly ubiquitous body of knowledge already.
What one would think.
Okay, fair enough. One would think. The questions that I get tend to be more about what you just talked about being addressed in this professional Scrum developer program. So, for example, how do I spend the remaining 7 hours and 45 minutes of my day after the daily scrum, right? That's where those questions come from.
And that's a lot of time.
It is. So is that what is meant to be addressed by the program?
Absolutely. So if a team forms and it has a tester and a programmer on it, the programmer doesn't write the code and then hand the tester and say, here, see if it works. Instead, the two of them know how to set up the requirements as tests, and then the programmer can go off and write code to see if those tests are satisfied, and the tester can go off and write the tests to see if the code then passes them. So it's helping them understand how to work together using these modern practices. I thought when we introduced Scrum that suddenly there'd be a burst of repressed developers who had always known how to really build great software as teams and were just waiting to be released from waterfall. Much to my surprise, instead, it exposed a lot of people who didn't know what they were doing. You know, they could code, they could write code that would work, you know, they could make it happen somehow, but they just didn't have any set of practices or ideas of how to work together to do it. Can you imagine a whole profession that thinks the way to hit a date is to reduce quality?
I don't have to imagine it. We live in it.
Right. And then we go out and we try to recruit, and this goes to the children's story. We try to recruit our children to follow in our footsteps, and they say, "You got to be kidding me. Don't you know when you come home, you talk about how you had to cut corners, how you had to lie about what's really done?" And they say, "What, you want me to do this too?" It's really, you know, we've gotten so used to it, we're no longer appalled by it.
Isn't that something?
Yes. And yet this is a great profession we have, one of the best in the world. Just we've kind of lost our way. With Waterfall, it just really polluted us.
I'll tell you that when I put that question out on Twitter, "Send me your questions for Ken," many of them were about those engineering practices. And so how about I give you one of those, and let's see what the professional Scrum developer program might say about it. This is from Ryan Easterbrook, by the way, who asks, "Is automated testing an absolute necessity for success with Scrum teams? For example, must I be writing unit and regression or acceptance tests in order for me to be doing Scrum?"
Okay. The answer to that, of course, is neither yes nor no, because that would be an absolute and then it'd be a methodology. We have found that if you don't test as thoroughly as you can everything you do, you stand a good chance of, in your next piece of work you do, laying some code, laying some design on top of something that doesn't work. And then if you keep doing that, let's say for days or even weeks, you pretty soon no longer have a mess. You have a mess on a mess on a mess on a mess on a mess. And the amount of work that might have been needed to remediate it at first, which might be one unit of work, is no longer an algebraic incremental increase. Instead, it's a logarithmic increase. You have created a mess. So to the extent that you can use automated testing, sprint by sprint, and simply add the test that you're developing to the test that you've had before and let it run automatically and quickly, you're able to build more and more and more without getting a drag that the manual testing might create. Similarly, if you'd add that more and more and more testing, you aren't creating unknown problems that you don't have any idea how long it'll take to clear up. Most organizations, the manifestation of that is the stabilization phase at the end of the release being of unknown duration. It's unknown because we don't know what we don't know. So I would rephrase his question to pose a question to him saying, is it a good practice to continue doing work upon prior work unless you know that the work that you did before actually does what it's supposed to do? And can you do that in sequence, piece by piece by piece, without automating it? If you can, no need to automate it. If you can't, probably a wise thing to do.
So I tell you what, as a professional Scrum developer trainer, that's me.
Yes.
I've gone through this program and I'm going to be one of the folks representing Scrum for you to the world. I'll tell you what I told Ryan, and you see if, why don't you check me out and see if I'm giving good advice.
Okay.
Must you actually have unit testing and regression tests, Ryan, in order to be doing Scrum? Well, no, actually. Scrum doesn't propose that you must do these things. What it does do is shines an incredibly bright light on the effect of not doing it, and then expects you to be professional enough to understand that the way to address the technical debt you're building is through these tools.
You know, David, I think I'm ready to retire. You can take over. That was a very good answer.
Okay, good. So I passed.
Absolutely. What you hit on is Scrum requires transparency, and if you're transparent, you're not doing good work. Guess what?
What is a methodology, and why is Scrum not one?
A methodology is a very prescriptive, full definition of how to do something. So it is a method, and the ology of that method, meaning the detailing of it. So, for instance, if you were trying to know whether you should do have an automated unit test harness, you would be able to go to page, let's say, 116.4 in a methodology, and it would tell you. So you wouldn't have to think because the instructions on what to do were already there. Scrum, because it's based on this idea that we're doing complex work, says the only people who can make that decision are the ones doing the work. And what we'll, instead of telling them what to do, is we'll give them the transparency to make that decision as effectively as they can. So one requires internal intelligence. The other way, you've bought the intelligence, and presumably all you have to do is follow it.
So Ken, moving forward, what do you see for Scrum.org? How are you going to evolve the organization?
I intend to both increase the number of assessments, the effectiveness and accuracy of the assessments, and result in certifications, as well as I intend to create additional training programs that I think hit at the weak spots that Scrum's uncovering. I think more than that, and something that has not been my strength to date, is I intend to engage people who I think are very thoughtful, caring about our profession, and have them help form it so it becomes the best thing. What I'll be more careful this time in doing this is that these people will have to be driven by intention and driven by values rather than driven by using Scrum.org to get money.
What does that look like? Is that a board of directors? Is that an advisory council?
I'm not clear. I am actually wide open to it. Many people don't want to be on a board of directors because there's liabilities. But I'm going to start working with people who I think share similar values and gather a bunch of people. And we are going to meet periodically. And also there'll be people whose feedback I value and can do something with. This has for a long period of time been a one-man show. And when Jeff joined me more actively, it was a pleasure because it locked some weight came off my shoulder. But I'd really like people to start thinking of the Scrum Council as the people leading this rather than me.
Well, one of the things you just mentioned in that description is that Scrum has exposed some difficulties or dysfunctions within organizations that you hope to address with additional training opportunities. And one of those obviously is the development practices, so we're on track for that. What are some of the other things that Scrum.org can help with?
This moves up to there's an intermediate level for Scrum developers that's not in place. So we're starting just at basic skills. So intermediate level. And then at the advanced level, what I'm looking for are programs that address things like total cost of ownership. That is, we often view a system or a project as just having the cost of the development, and we don't take into account how the decisions made then affect the overall operational sustainability, maintenance, and further development costs. So I'm trying to shift that thinking so that financial people as well as the business look at this not as a system but as an inherent value in their company that they can either do well with or badly with. Attendant to that are ideas like risk management, something that I am not very good at and that is absolutely missing is the soft side of Scrum. People getting along and working with each other, team formation, conflict resolution. So I would expect to see all these types of things. My concern is, of course, not making them a cherry-picking exercise, but having them all tie into the transparency of what Scrum exposes. So I think we have enough stuff to do for years to come.
As elements of my conversation with Ken Schwaber implied, I've been involved with Scrum.org and Scrum.org's Certified Professional Developer program for a little while now. One of the things that I did when entering into this program is go through 7 days of training with Ken and several others in preparation for being able to teach this class. Of course, I didn't do that alone, and there were several other people going through that training curriculum with me. I asked us students to sit together at the end of the course and just have a discussion about what we had experienced and what we think our students will experience as a result. I'll freely admit that I was a reluctant comer to this program because, as I think we all know, it's impossible to certify competence. It's not, however, impossible to certify knowledge. And this is no different than taking a test in grade school or in college. It's a demonstration of knowledge, but that doesn't at all speak to the experience that I had in the classroom with the other students.
Chris Tullier.
John Alexander.
Richard Hundhausen.
Ernst Perpignan.
Giovanni Bassi.
Okay, so we've been all together now for about a week, learning all about Scrum and Visual Studio ALM for the Professional Scrum Developer course that we're all about to start teaching. Richard, what is a Professional Scrum Developer?
So that's been loosely defined up until now, but we finally have a way to say that, hey, what happens the other 7 hours and 45 minutes in a day? So after you do your stand-up and your Scrum, you go back to your desk, what do? Twiddle your thumbs and still doing good Scrum? Or are we actually now saying, hey, here's how you tackle problems, here's some modern engineering practices and some cool tools in Visual Studio to use? So we're basically empowering the team to get their job done by the fusion of process and tools.
And so how do you guys think this week has gone? Do you see an opportunity to actually deliver on what Rich just promised?
Absolutely. I think that by having either individuals come in on an open enrollment of a course or bringing this to companies where teams can participate together, by creating self-organizing teams, teams can actually participate in this whole process as that particular development team throughout those 5 days and really get a taste of not only the new technology that Visual Studio ALM helps empower you to do, but also really getting a handle on best engineering practices and the Scrum process itself.
Yeah, I think it's great. We are not talking about management only. We are going to the engineering practices and taking that extra step.
So this last 7 days has been about what? Scrum? How to be a good Scrum Master?
Yeah. The focus is the team, the people that are actually doing the work. Training for Scrum Masters and Product Owners, they go somewhere else. There are courses for that. We are not talking about the Scrum Master's responsibility in this course. So the focus is the guys that are doing the engineering.
So, Chris, do you think that this has any chance of helping with all the flaccid Scrum implementations or the Scrum Butt implementations we have out there in the world?
We're definitely going to bring a consistent view to Scrum. So you're going to get what Scrum should look like. And when you take it back to your organization, you know, out of this course, you're going to, you know, have the ideal case, right? So it's up to you as to how strictly you implement, right? But we're going to give you the ideal case.
So everybody sitting around this discussion right now came into this discussion knowing about Scrum, knowing a lot about Visual Studio ALM, Team System in 2008, those sorts of tools. Did you guys learn anything in the past week?
Oh, yeah. Me, personally, I did.
Yeah, what'd you learn?
There was this whole segment about the testing platform manager that, you know, that Sam Guggenheim shown us. That was very interesting. The architecture tools also from Visual Studio 2010, I haven't seen that before, and it looks pretty promising.
I think it's great that we were able to get together because there's so much experience that was shared during this training, and everybody brought different perspective on different subjects. So this has been a very nice week where we could learn from all the other people's failures and successes, and this is priceless. This goes way beyond all the training we could ever find. These experiences, we could be consulting for a month and it wouldn't be the same thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are very knowledgeable in the tools and in the process. So the train the trainer isn't so much focused on that, but it's how do we get that message out to our students as efficiently as possible and make it fun and compelling experience.
Yeah, teaching techniques, right? Everybody brought different teaching techniques also. That was pretty cool.
So how is this course maybe a little bit different in its experience than what people might be used to as Microsoft-certified courseware?
Really, the course itself, it differs from traditional Microsoft courseware in the fact that the labs, per se, are really non-prescriptive. It's really as real-world as you can get in a classroom, where we actually have self-organizing teams. They're pulling from the product backlog in their sprint planning. They're decomposing the tasks, and then they're getting the job done with the sprint, and we're moving on through there. And we have several of those sessions throughout the courseware, so it's really up to the team to get the job done.
So, Rich, when you were putting the course together, did you concentrate on happy path scenarios? I mean, what John just described sounds a lot like, you know, a very ideal situation for a Scrum team.
So my background is building courses like John describes, where it's heavily scripted and there's a lot of safety nets everywhere to help the students when they get off course. Hey, if you screw up the project, guess what? We pull out the finished solution and you can see what you should have done right. This course, I really had to kind of be convinced early on that it would work. And then I thought, let's just try it. So not only are we doing this self-organizing team solving problems their own way, we went one step further and we dropped a central TFS server in the room and let everybody bang on it at the same time. So we've taken our risks to the power of 10. But you know what? All my fears of source control, conflicts, my fears that people will cross over into other projects, create tables in other people's databases, just didn't really happen. It didn't surface. Teams want to learn and they want a real-world environment to where they own these definitions of done. And we hold them as instructors to making sure that it's fit for purpose and it's accepted.
And Dave, you mentioned the happy path. That's not where I was going. The app that we're centered around is really a brownfield app where there are several problems, and the team has to come together and solve those problems.
So you mean what I hear you describing is we didn't sit down and start working on Hello World?
No, not at all.
We actually failed some sprints. So this is part of the learning process.
Yes.
We actually failed. It's all right.
It's all right to fail?
Yes, it's all right. It's part of the learning process. When we failed, we learned why we failed and what we can do to improve it, because it's inspect and adapt all the time.
So did you guys feel pressured to deliver in a time box sprint in class this week? I did.
No, not at all.
Are you kidding?
yes. It was having a two-hour compressed sprint, where normally you'd have a month amount of time or a lot more time than 2 hours. Yeah, there was a little bit of pressure on us to get things done.
And I think that's part of the process, because in the real, out there, I mean, not in the real world, but out there, the teams are really feeling pressure of delivering stuff. And that's basically one of the learning points that they can get out of this course is, okay, what to do when this happens? Do we take the moment to sit down in a retrospective and think about what happened and what we can improve? And those are the habits that we want the developers to have in the future so that they can improve their gaming.
And you know what? We had a real product owner. The guy was really pushing us. And my group, my team really felt some pressure. And at some point, we actually almost dropped our definition of done. We were almost dropping it, and then somebody brought it up and said, no, we cannot do that. And that was really, really great as a learning experience for the group as what we should be doing. So this two-hour sprint is really interesting.
So it was pretty tempting to cut corners on quality,
yes.
Right?
Yes,
that
we almost did it.
Was beaten down on me.
Yes. Yeah. Mm.
So you guys all work with Scrum teams in the real world, too. What are some common things that you see teams struggling with who are trying to implement Scrum?
I think one of them is making the Scrum morning meetings work, right? Getting everybody involved, getting them to contribute, and it's bringing it more than just a status meeting, right? A lot of people just kind of go through the motions during that.
What'd you do since we last met? What are you going to do tomorrow?
Right,
that sort of thing?
Yeah. And the attention on quality also, with the definition of them, a lot of things don't really apply a definition of done. It either doesn't exist or it's a wish list that nobody adheres to. And, you know, it's just a piece of paper on the wall.
So you identified a problem that you see pretty commonly in Scrum teams in the wild. Have you taken anything back from the last week that you think you have in your toolbox now you can help those teams along?
Yeah, and everybody's got to come to the course and find out.
Nice.
That was good, yeah, exactly.
Good answer.
Exactly. I think this course will help teams really improve their game if they're already doing Scrum to really kind of strengthen what they're currently doing, or if they're just getting into Scrum and finding what it's all about. There's a little something for everybody.
Yeah.
It's a different course. It's not necessarily for everybody, because if you're just looking for the prescriptive training of push this button on page 22, you're not going to find that. But if you really want to improve your software craftsmanship and really learning how to self-organize in a team, this course is for you.
Yeah, even if your engineering practices are already polished, right? Because we're talking about self-organization, emergent architecture, and all these different things. They're not only technical, right? So there's a if you're not doing Agile yet, you're looking for a way to start, I think a great opportunity here actually to not only talk about Visual Studio, but also to spread the word about what Agile is and why is that important.
So the analogy I like to use is from the movie The Karate Kid, where the young kid was asked to wax the old guy's car. Why am I doing this over and over again? Wax on, wax off. And it wasn't because the car needed waxing. It was so that he was improving his muscle memory. So part of this course is exactly that. We run these people through 4 or 5 sprints. We hold them to the time boxes. We make them do a planning session. We make them do a review and a retrospective, owning the definition of done the whole time. It does maybe get a little old by the end of the week, but we're turning this into a discipline. So they go back to work on Monday. They go, oh, we know what to do. We just have a longer period of time to do it. We've got some different people in front of the class, different product owner, but the memory is still there.
And as a bonus, you know, I learned some things about Visual Studio 2010 this week in Team Foundation Server.
Can't see them slide right down a line.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on another great episode of the Pluralcast. We want the Pluralcast to be your favorite technical program. And to do that, we really need your involvement. Give us some feedback or tell us your story over at cast.pluralsight.com. Now, if you're interested in Certified Scrum Developer Program, you can also head over to pluralsight.com for that and other great training opportunities. Thanks very much. This is David Starr, and I hope to see you in class sometime soon.